This is Dream Power Radio, the place where your dreams turn into reality. Here is your host, Debbie Spector Weissman.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Dream Power Radio on the amazing Women and Men of Power Network, the world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International. I'm your host, Debbie Spector Weissman, the Dream Coach. This is the show where we talk about dreams, both daytime and nighttime dreams, and how you can use them to make the internal shift to a life you love and rediscover the truth of who you really are. Today's show is going to be a little bit different. The focus isn't so much on you, but on your kids, and in particular, how to help them get through this turbulent school year. Well, I'll tell you, when my kids were growing up, the start of the school year was always a time of excitement. Excitement for my children, who were happy to see their friends on a daily basis, if not so happy about having to combine that with studies and homework. It was exciting for me, too, as I knew my kids were furthering their education, being exposed to new things and new adventures that I couldn't provide for them myself. The one thing I never thought about was their safety. Back then, schools were such a haven that the idea of their being safe never even entered my consciousness. It was simply a given. Well, what a difference a generation makes. Starting with the epidemic of school shootings, which made active shooter drills as common as fire drills, schools were no longer automatically the place where you could drop off your kids and feel a sense of peace. And if that wasn't enough, the pandemic led to a lost year of school closings, remote learning, and a perpetual sense of anxiety and worry that things might never return to normal. Now that school is back in session, these concerns continue, with added questions about the roles of vaccinations, mask wearing, social distancing, and room ventilation that gets in the way of the reason kids go to school in the first place, to learn. And it also raises the question of what it is we're now teaching our kids. Are we teaching them to live in fear, to be anxious about being in public, to get to the place where they even refuse to go to school? And is there a way to combat this? Well, as someone who's committed to helping others live their dream lives, you know I'm looking for answers that not only allay our fears, but help us move beyond them, to not only survive in this new world we're living in, but to thrive. And toward that end, I'm happy to welcome Florence Ann Romano back to Dream Power Radio. Florence is a childcare advocate who works tirelessly to promote both physically and mentally healthy children and a supporting community for them and their families. Welcome back to Dream Power Radio, Florence.
Thank you for having me back, Debbie. It's always so good to be here.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Well, Florence, you know, in some ways, we're in uncharted waters when it comes to creating a healthy atmosphere for our children in these times.
Right.
What can a parent do, for instance, when their child is so afraid that they demand that they don't go to school?
I think we're seeing a lot of anxiety on both sides of it. I suppose, you know, we're always thinking it's the children who have the fear. It's the children that don't want to go back to school. And yes, that's obvious. But what I'm seeing come out of COVID is all of a sudden, you're looking at these parents who are used to having their kids with them, and they're used to now kind of controlling the situation. And it's interesting to see parents all of a sudden have to go back to giving up that control and trusting other people with their children. And it used to be, like you said, just commonplace. You would just trust that school and you trust those teachers. That's what we did. But I think COVID made us all a little more fearful. And that's why I don't want to just you know, say it's just kids that are having a hard time with this transition. I think parents are too. And I think that's making the kids also feel a sense of anxiety because they're picking it up from their parents as well. Kids are very perceptive that way. Energy is everything. And so I really want to concentrate on how both parties, parents and children, are coping with it and how they can help each other.
Yeah, well, I tell you, you know, the truth is kids aren't going to be listening to this. It's the parents who are. And you're right. Kids don't live in a vacuum. And, you know, they are picking up things that are going on all around them. So let's talk about the parent. How does a parent deal with the fears that they have, whatever the fears may be?
I think talking to other parents is important. I'm seeing a lot of my friends do that, where they're going to their friends in their community and saying, hey, I'm really struggling with this. Is this something you're feeling too? Is it just me? I think in life, we never want to feel we're like the crazy one, right? Like we're the only one who has these thoughts. And so I think parents are turning to other parents to help kind of calm them down in that way and say, okay, you know, I'm not alone in this. And I wonder if I can learn something from these other parents. How are they coping? What are they doing? Yeah. The other thing is I am a big, big advocate of communication. I think we need to make sure that we're also communicating with our children. Children are fearful of things, and I think they think adults are not scared. You know, adults seem to have all the answers. Adults, you know, they don't get nervous. They, you know, they seem infallible. And I like being able to pull back the veil on that for children so they can see that the feelings they're feeling are also similar to what adults are feeling. And that validates them and also makes you relatable to them in a different way, on a different level. And I'm not saying be friends with your children when they're younger. It's just the idea of that emotional connection that makes it safe and then opens the door for more conversation, because kids are resilient. They'll deal with anything. They're better at all that mask stuff than we are. You know, they just do what they're told. You know, we're all out here throwing a fit about it as adults, but they do what they're told and they do it happily most of the time. We could learn a lot from children, actually. But I think the most important thing is looking at the conversation and knowing that it's a safe place to have that conversation too with your children, and making sure that they know that there's no dumb question, that you don't make them feel intimidated or silly or embarrassed for asking something or feeling something. You know, think about yourself as an adult. And I always say this, we as adults want to be seen, heard, and understood. That's what's important to us. If we don't think about it, it's at least on that, you know, kind of subconscious level we do. Children want the same thing. So we want to make sure they are seen, heard, and understood too. And because you're able to do that, because there's a reciprocation of that, I think it makes it much easier for us to be able to explain what's happening. Even if we don't like what's happening, it doesn't feel good. It you know, just going back to school and the transition of it and still having to wear masks and things not being totally back to normal. You know, in life, you learn that things aren't fair. And you have to do things that you don't want to do sometimes. But it's important that we communicate to our children that we as adults have real feelings too, and we can validate each other's.
Well, what about the parents who maybe are afraid to admit that they're afraid?
The parents that admit they're afraid. I think today's the first day to do that. I think today is the first step to do that, that you can admit you're afraid. And there's a lot to be fearful of in the world, of course. But here's the good news. You're not alone in any of it, parents. Every single parent out there is dealing with exactly what you are. The fears of what's going on in school and getting your kids back and, you know, sickness and health. And where's this pandemic going? Are we going to go back into a lockdown? Or are our kids going to be back homeschooled again? And parents got through that and never wanted to do that again. So to think that they would have to do that again, I think causes a lot of anxiety. And the villages were taken away from all of these people, whether it was grandparents or a babysitter or whomever, a daycare. People were helping you take care of your kids. And then all of a sudden COVID hit and everyone was taken away from each other. And that was extremely traumatic. And I think everybody on some level is dealing with PTSD from it.
I think that's so true. This is a question that perhaps relates more for younger children. Last year, kids were home and they had to interact with their teachers and their classmates via computer. And now they're faced with being in a classroom with these people face to face. What can a parent do to help them make that transition?
It's funny that you say that because people have been talking about how even adults have to learn to be social again. Like we don't know how to like be with people anymore. I remember it was recently, like a few months ago, maybe. And it was like the first time I saw people in person. And I remember someone came up to me and gave me like a kiss on the cheek and a hug. And I was like, oh my God, you forget that, like, you know, you could go back to that. But I do think that there is something to be said for re-entering society in that way. But that's the least of my worries, I think, for children, because you see, it's like riding a bike. All of a sudden, you're back with people and you click back into that. And kids do. They've been missing their village. You know, we talk about how it takes a village to raise a child, but children have their own village. They have people that they need and count on. So I've seen that that transition is the easier one out of them for kids.
Yeah, no, I see that with my own grandchildren. I mean, my grandson is very happy to be able to go back to school and be with his friends again. And it seemed to be an easier transition in that sense. But I know some kids do struggle with it. Another thing, though, is that last year, when kids were being taught at home, they had a lot of free time and probably all used a lot of that time, you know, playing games or watching media or being on phones a lot more than experts say they should in terms of with their time. So now that they're back in school and doing, you know, more of a structured thing, how can a parent keep them on, you know, having what I would call more healthier habits and not spend all their time, you know, being on screens?
I had said that I really truly think that during COVID, you know, people were like, oh, kids are having too much screen time. They're doing too much of this and that. And I was like, if you take one thing away from these parents when they've already had everything taken away from them, that was never me. I was never giving that advice of like, limit that screen time. I'm like, just survive, get through this however you can. Now, like you said, we're back to a little bit more of a normal life. Yes, I think having a routine or going back to some sort of boundaries is important, where you do have a schedule, you have a structure. You know, maybe you get screen time when you come home for school for an hour before you start your homework, or maybe it's what the reward is at the end of the night after you're done with your homework before bed, whatever it might be, you know. But I do think this is the time to start those routines again, to start those expectations again in the home. But like anything, it's moderation. You know, I'm never an extremist in that way where it's like, you're taking everything away and we're not doing that anymore. And there's not going to be any, you know, sort of technology. You know, everyone can do whatever they want to do in their life. But I just feel like when the outside world has so much going on that is out of our control, and there are things that have been taken away from us, like I said, I just don't believe in further punishing ourselves. So that's why moderation, I think, is always key.
And so you also just said about schedules. So you think
schedules are important, and, you know, children respond to them. One of my friends was talking to me about how, you know, they weren't doing their chores anymore, and they used to have a chore chart and do all of that every day. And they kind of got off of that with COVID, and they brought it back now with the beginning of the school year. And they started it about a week before everyone went back to school, which I think is smart because you got to prepare for it. But they said that it changed, actually leaps and bounds, how their children were behaving. because they do crave that structure. They don't want to be told that they need structure. Don't tell the kids that, but they want it on a level that maybe they can't access or realize. But it does change the behavior of your child. It changes the rhythm of your home. So again, start small. Maybe it's a chore chart. Maybe it's something like that. Or maybe it's just, you know, you could be very simple. It's just the expectations or the values of the home that's taped to your refrigerator or something like that. But just something that's visible, that people understand that there are rules in the home and there are expectations of each other. And, you know, I think it's interesting also to tell children what the adults' expectations are, because adults have expectations from their children. And they don't realize that children don't realize they're putting those demands on their parents. So maybe have a conversation about expectation. Hey, I expect you to make your bed because I'm going to go grocery shopping so you can eat. You know, I mean, so I think there is a give and take there, but you never think about the parent side of it. And I think getting children to get a different perspective on that could be interesting.
Well, that brings up again the role of conversation, the importance of conversation. And this conversation has to take a little break now. We are speaking with child care advocate Florence Ann Romano, and we'll be right back. When is a car not a car?
When it shows up in your dreams. Cars are one of the most common dream symbols. If you don't know why you're dreaming about cars or any image, it can leave you confused or scared. But that dream could be a solution to a pressing problem, or an insight into a solution that's been bugging you for years. Go to my website and sign up for a complimentary discovery session, and I'll help you understand why a dream is a terrible thing to waste.
Go to thedreamcoach.net for more information.
Welcome back to Dream Power Radio with your host, Debbie Spector Weissman.
Welcome back to Dream Power Radio. I'm your host, Debbie Spector Weissman, and we're talking about making a healthy environment for kids in this school year with Florence Ann Romano. Well, Florence, if you could wave a magic wand and come up with the perfect day for a child, let's say one under 10, what would that day look like?
The perfect day, get them to school, no matter what, you know, whatever is going on that day, whether you're homeschooling or they actually go to traditional school. You know, I think having that morning routine is important. You're getting them breakfast. You're making sure, you know, that they've got everything they need to go to school. They go to school, they have a great day, they come home, and then it's time for homework and it's time for studies and probably a lot of extracurricular activities. And, you know, kids are over scheduled today in this world. They are doing a lot of things. So I think making sure that your kids every day are having time for play and having time for rest is very important for them to keep up with everything that they're doing. So building that in is important. And then making sure they go to bed at a reasonable hour. You know, kids, they need that sleep. Of course, parents need that sleep too. But that's when kids grow, that, you know, that's when kids dream. That's when kids, you know, do a lot of important work while they're sleeping. And if they're not well rested and they're not getting the right nutrients and, you know, nourishment, it shows up in a lot of places in their life. And it's going to show up in school a lot, lots of the time. Their studies will suffer, their extracurriculars will suffer, their social aspects of their life will suffer. So I think a good balance of rest and play is very important.
Okay, this is a two-part question coming up here. A lot of women stayed home with their children last year, and they're now going back to work now that school's in session. How do they deal with the kids' feelings about this, and how they deal with their own feelings about that separation?
The separation with going back to work, again, going back to like what I said earlier, parents got used to being with their kids more. And, you know, even though there was a lot of suffering that went on with COVID, one thing that parents look back, I think, on now is the idea that they had more time with their children than they ever really had. Maybe they got to see them wake up in the morning and they never did, or put them to bed at night, or read them a story, or do their homework with them, or see their faces when, you know, they were done with school for the day and then talk about what they learned, whatever it might might be, I think a lot of working parents, as hard as it was to balance working and probably homeschooling the children, did get to see their children more and in a different way. And I don't think they expected, once they went back to work, to feel like they were losing them again in some sense. And it was a moment in time, certainly. And it's made people make career decisions too, I'd say, on the other side of it, about knowing that they want to spend more time at home or making their schedules more flexible or whatever it might be. But I do believe that in order for parents to be able to transition back in a healthy way, they have to be honest with themselves about the feelings and honest with their children about it too. I think kids want to know that they're going to be missed. And if they're sad about you going, they want to see that you also are sad about it, but that you're both going to do brave things. You're both, you know, you're going to go to work and you're going to go to school and we're going to be together again at this time. And, you know, make sure you set that expectation for them. Make sure they know what's going to happen during the day and when things are going to happen. Again, structure. And it also gives them some sort of sense of security, knowing that there are goals, there are milestones that are going to be hit during the day. And I think for parents too, you need to do that for yourself when you're going back to work is, you know, can you FaceTime with the kids at some point, or when during the day, can you take a little break where you can connect with them? Do what you can to customize the situation to help make it a little easier going back. Because if working from home is not an option for you going forward or an option you don't want, find a way to connect with your kids that's going to make you feel like you're still present.
And it all goes back to that basic idea of communication.
Right.
For everything. This is a question, it doesn't all pertain particularly to, you know, school, but in child care in general, a lot of kids, when you have to place limits on children, their answer to that is a meltdown. How do parents deal with meltdowns in a healthy way?
Meltdowns are hard because you want children to be able to express their feelings, and having a meltdown is clearly they are upset about something. We as adults have meltdowns too. I think the most important thing during a meltdown is not to escalate the situation any more than it is. Clearly, they're having an emotional reaction. If you can get down on their level, even physically, and start to calm them down and say, you know, try not say to them, but have them try to match your energy. Your calm energy is going to help them calm down too. Have them take some deep breaths. Acknowledge the feelings that they're feeling, that you see that they are upset. You see, you can actually say those things out loud to them so they feel seen, heard, and understood in that way. And then ask them, what can I do to help you right now? And then start that conversation. And it will calm them down enough to hopefully be able to start talking in sentences about what's going on. But it's also distracting them from whatever it is that just triggered them. But don't go into the situation with the same type of energy that they have, because nothing is going to happen. The same way as adults, when you're talking to someone, if someone's losing it on you and you start screaming back, you can't fight fire with fire. It's the same thing with kids. You have to try to calm the situation, diffuse the anger, diffuse the feelings at least.
Well, what about the kid who, even if things are calmed down, is reluctant to speak and to express their emotions?
I think it's important for you as the parent or caretaker to start teaching them an emotional language, because it doesn't come naturally to everybody. And so if you start saying, you look like you're having a hard time following directions right now, or you're having a difficult time because you don't want to do whatever it is, X, Y, or Z that we're doing. If you can actually describe to the child, to them, that I see how you're reacting, this is what I think you're feeling, then if you can start asking them at least yes or no questions, you know, is this how you feel? Is this what you want? That will at least start getting the conversation going if they don't know the words to use. But sometimes you need to be able to teach them that.
Mm, and it takes time. It's not
something. It does. Oh gosh, that's not going to happen overnight.
That's the hard thing, because everybody wants things to happen right now.
Exactly. Instant gratification. That's the world we live in, though. So, you know, kids are no different.
I know that's the hard part. Speaking about the world we're living in right now, the country is very polarized. And what if you're a parent who believes in vaccinations and in wearing masks, and you find out that your kid's best friend has parents who are anti-vax and anti-masks? And what do you do? Do you break up the friendship? How do you deal with that?
That's a very, very timely question. And I've seen a lot of discord with that, with families. And generally right now, I think because of the Delta variant and things like that, people are a little bit more hesitant for those that are avid vaxxers. And, you know, they don't let their kids around other kids that are not vaccinated. They don't let them have those play dates. They don't socialize as a family with those other families. And that's sad because it's not the end of a friendship necessarily, but for right now, it's a hiatus, certainly, unless, you know, things change there, unless the world changes where it's not going to matter if you're vaccinated or not, that we're all going to get through this and it's going to be okay. And I say to each their own. It has to be what's comfortable for your family. So right now, my advice is give everyone a little bit of grace, because I know none of us know how to do this. Even the experts don't know how to do this. So we're doing the best we can with the information that we have. But at the end of the day, you have to protect your family. So whatever is the right choice for you, we all just need to say, I respect it and, you know, love you from afar or whatever it is, and go from there.
And how do you explain that to your little kid who wonders why he can't play with his friend?
That's a hard conversation depending on the age of the child. But what I've heard a lot of parents say is that, you know, when they've explained COVID, that there's, you know, germs and it can get you sick and this and that. And that really basically they're just buying time, saying, you know, well, there's a shot, but, you know, everybody needs to get the shot. And right now they don't have the shot. So, you know, we can't play with them until that happens. So I think it's more so just being as honest as you can and explaining as much as you can, but in terms that a child can comprehend. You also don't want to make the child feel like those people are bad people. And I don't want to teach our children that the personal choices you make in life aren't necessarily a reason to hate another person. That's a pretty strong thing to do. And I just want parents to be aware of that. Careful what you say around your kids about other people,
because they pick up things so easily. Right. So right. Getting back to the idea, though, that good parents will always put their children first, sometimes to the point where they neglect themselves and their own well-being. How do they get to the point where they can say to themselves, no, I love my kid and I provide for them, but I also need some time for myself, and not feel guilty about it?
I think what you just said is what you need to say, is I need to make time for myself. And what I see happen with parents, especially mommies, is they burn the candle at both ends and they just have nothing left to give. But I always say to my friends, but if you aren't okay, if you aren't healthy, mind, body, and soul, then you're not going to be good for anyone else. I see that happen with me. You give a lot of yourself to your friends and your family, and then you wake up one day and you feel so depleted and you wonder why. Well, it's because you're not taking care of yourself in it. You're not taking care of your body and your mind and listening to what it needs. And self-care is not selfish. And self-care looks different to each person. It's whatever fills you up. It's whatever revitalizes you. And it doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to even cost money. It just has to be the time you make for yourself to do it, and giving yourself the time to figure out what is it that will fill me up, that will fulfill me, that will bring me joy, that will bring me back to a place of peace, that will, like I said, revitalize me in some sort of way. So spending time also figuring out what that is important.
Yeah, that's a wonderful message to end this. I just have one final question. How can people find out more about you and your services?
I'm all over social media. You can go to florenceann.romano for my website. I have lots of blogs there to help you out, but also very active on Instagram, florenceann.romano. I answer every DM I get. So please don't hesitate to reach out. I like to think of myself as your virtual village.
Oh, well, thank you so much for being on Dream Power Radio today.
Thank you, Debbie.
We've been speaking with child care advocate Florence Ann Romano. I hope you've enjoyed today's program. If you have, please tell all your friends, follow me, and drop a positive review on your podcast site. Until next time, this is Debbie Spector Weissman saying, sweet dreams, everybody.
You've been listening to Dream Power Radio with your host, Debbie Spector Weissman. For more information on Debbie or to sign up for her newsletter, go to dreampowerradio.com. This has been Dream Power Radio on the amazing Women and Men of Power Network, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International.